My name's Ken Schumann. I'm the head of communications at Trulia. And I hope that we have a great hour here. I hope it's very interactive. You'll notice from the title, it's not called PR media. It's traditional media, social media. It's called media measurement. I don't know about you guys, but I hate putting definitions on things. I hate silos. I like looking at everything as some form of communication. So we have a very diverse panel today. We got two traditional PR guys, both inside at companies, and we've got two agency folks on the other end of the table, focused more in the social realm, and I hope that we can give you a wide perspective on how to measure. I think we all agree that it's not a load of crap. We wouldn't be here talking about it if it was a load of crap. And we all believe it is a little bit part art, part science. And if you can leave here today with one new tool that you've never used, if you can leave here today taking a step back before you think about what your metrics are and what you're really trying to accomplish on something, then it means we didn't waste your time. So hopefully we don't waste your time. But before we even get started, I thought we'd just go down and have everyone introduce themselves, and then I'll kick things off.
Hey, everybody. My name is Brendan Lewis. I'm at Living Social, Director of Corporate Communications over there. I handle everything on the corporate side of the house. I'm also Ken Schumann's twin brother.
Kelly Mills, VaynerMedia. We are a very small digital social media startup, and I am the SVP there. We are based out of New York. We work with big brands on social media consulting.
Before I introduce myself, I just have to say we're informally referring to this panel as three beards and a lady, if you need another hashtag to use. I'm David Armano. I'm Executive Vice President, Global Innovation and Integration at Edelman Digital.
So I wanted to kick things off and have everyone talk a little bit maybe about one specific time when they had a great idea, but how do you take a great idea in measurement? How do you show value in what you're doing? And I thought maybe I could define it a little bit and then have everyone share an experience and a tool. The part that's the art is you need to paint a picture. You need to figure out what are we trying to accomplish by doing this campaign, by making this announcement, by driving up our Facebook friends, our Twitter followers. What's the art behind it? How are we going to paint the picture? And that's just taking the step back with a blank canvas, starting fresh every time. Next is the metrics. Once you know the painting and the picture that you want to paint, how do you know if you are successful in painting that picture? How can you justify more resources and prove that you've done a good job? So, for me, I'm going to give one example, and then I'm going to kick it on down the line. At Trulia, we're a real estate site. We were doing lots of celebrity real estate. People love real estate porn. Who doesn't want to see the inside of John Smoltz's house if you're a baseball player? Who doesn't want to see the inside of Christina Aguilera's house if you like drunken messes and how they live? So we decided our art was we could just send a link to the media and say, hey, here's a slideshow for you, write about it. But we knew if we created our own spot on the website and created our own celebrity and luxury blog, we could build a brand. And Trulia would become synonymous with real estate to folks who maybe aren't in the market to buy a home, that aren't looking for a rental. So we decided to take a step back after a year of doing a program and actually build a blog for this. And then we had to think about, well, what are we trying to get from this blog? And for us, it was simple, SEO. How can we drive more visits through Google? How can we build a brand outside of every property address in America? People, if you go to Google Trends, even if you're connected right now, I bet you 3 of the top 10 terms are probably celebrity names. So we took the step back and we're like, yeah, we could continue to get media hits, but could we do more? Then how do we measure it? Well, we didn't want to chew our own, you know, feed the, whatever that saying is, you know, eat your hand that feeds you, I don't know. We didn't want the media to stop writing about us because we turned into a media ourselves. So we always give it to the media first. Then we put it up on our site. And then we did lots of testing to making sure that we weren't taking away. Was Us Weekly going to stop putting it in their blog because we had our own blog? So for us, it's looking at the tool that we used when doing this in terms of where people stop writing. Very simple. Do we get articles or do we not? Then is it connecting as referring traffic? So as a PR guy, I live in Omniture all day. I look at my referring traffic. I look to see if celebrity blogs drive more traffic than sport blogs. We found out that sport blogs, tiny little niche sport blogs, we can do a home of an athlete, will drive three times as much traffic as an Us Weekly hit for Christina. And then on the Omniture side, on the blog side, we actually use Google Analytics. And we're looking at our SEO through Google. And we set goals every quarter. 50% of traffic, SEO. 70% of traffic, SEO. And my team looks for homes based on what's trending, based on what we can do to reach those goals via the blog. We don't have traffic goals. I'm not saying I want 100,000 hits at this blog every month. I want 50% of my traffic to be via SEO. So we use different tools for different types of measurements, but there were multiple outcomes we were looking for. Brennan?
I'm going to take a little step back and talk about kind of the traditional media side. We operate in a space that's very hot right now, very widely contested, if you will. There's an incumbent leader that's been defined by the media, company based in Chicago called Groupon, if you may have heard of them. And there's also there's a volume and an easy barrier to entry in our space. There were 700 daily deal spaces or companies that popped up last year. You know, 150 to 200 of them closed. So there was a lot of other noise in the space as well. And we use tools to sort of help define and filter out the noise about all the other competitors, and also noise that comes from events that maybe our competitor did. They went public this year. We were kind of lumped into that space, if you will, or into a lot of their coverage because of events that they were doing, leaked memos or going public or other controversies that may have popped up. We use a monitoring tool called Infoition, which is a traditional kind of media monitoring tool, if you will. It's a daily clip service, but it's also an intelligent one then, that we can go in and define search terms. We can monitor things out. We can hit the pause button on things just so when we anticipate sort of a huge deluge of stories or data, that really kind of messes up the waters for us and doesn't help us really define our messages or make sure what we're talking about is resonating. We use that really heavily, and it certainly has helped steer a lot of our programs and also steered a lot of our messaging that we've thrown out there.
So to change tactics for a little bit, I think on the social side of things, we're really looking at a space where we can measure a lot at the moment. I think there's an influx of data. Actually, for a lot of brands, it's too much data right this second. So at Vayner, we kind of look at it slightly differently than art versus science. We really look at it as sort of IQ versus EQ, and we look at it as IQ is sort of the piece that you can measure. It's the data that comes in, and the EQ is what we have to overlay to make sure we can give context in the story with any given brand that we work with. We can really sort of sit down with them and understand their business objectives, go from there and make sure it's really like coming back to their bottom line. It's much more about sort of brand awareness when it leads to whatever it is that they're trying to accomplish as a business. For a lot of our clients, they're really starting to understand these technologies and be able to play with them, whether they're laddering up into marketing, legal in some cases, public affairs, comms, whatever it might be. We're finding that the social and digital folks within a brand are really starting to be able to drive the conversations. The key for them is being able to turn around and give those numbers a story, show their bosses, show their CMOs, show their CEOs what it is that means. So for us, it's really sort of, I think science is going to solve first in metrics and measurement. For us, it will always be an art to some level. We at Vayner kind of use the traditional, like Radian6, V2. We spend a lot of time with Buddy Media. But we also really overlay emerging technologies. We think that's actually where the win is going to be for brands. So there's some that are probably a little too small to talk about just yet in this big of a room. I think they'd be overwhelmed. But we're looking at companies like AlphaBoost and spending a lot of time with them, really trying to understand how we can splice four or five emerging technologies together, use the sort of standard set of tools, and come at sort of the art and science equation like that.
I'm going to talk to this in sort of three layers, if you will. philosophy, tool perspective, and then sort of a real-world example. I'll start with philosophy. We recently brought on an individual named Richard Ng, who came from SynCaps, a super smart guy, and I wanted to consult with him before I got in front of this crazy smart audience who's probably going to pick apart everything we say. And, you know, he said something that really stuck with me. I want to make sure I get the quote right. He said, "Information in the information age is as valuable as stone in the stone age." So that's a great precursor to, you know, the discussion about tools, because essentially what that's saying is, you know, tools are nothing without context. But, of course, we all know we still need tools, so it's really tools plus context. So that said, we kind of take an agnostic view when it comes to tools. We use what works best, and again, I'm going to focus a little bit on the social side because that's our area of specialty. There's some great tools out there that help us. There's a suite of Google tools. There are tools like Topsy that we use that are really helpful with specific networks like Twitter, keyword tool on Google. We obviously, on the paid side, we use tools like Radian 6, Sysmos. We also use, interestingly enough, to get insights on sort of demographics, we use ComScore, and we mix those. There's a number of others that I'll probably pepper through as we discuss, but these are some of the tools that we use. And again, it's really important for the context. And then to that point, on context and using some of these tools, the way that we structure our teams, we have an analytics group. Our analytics group works pretty closely with our strategy group as well. And I'll give a specific example, too. So we look at things like conversation metrics, conversational data, using some tools like Radian 6 and to analyze what people are saying. And we use them to primarily drive, not just to just measure initiatives, but to also get us to a point where we can analyze that sort of conversational data so we can get insights from that. So we were working with a client in the dairy industry, for an example, and we were basically analyzing conversation, kind of narrowing it down to the industry space and what people were saying in that. We also looked at search terms, very specific search terms. And once we began to pull that data and analyze it and do the sort of typical things, the way you visualize some of that data, we right off the bat saw some opportunities and some gaps. We saw that people were talking about the dairy industry in a way that when we looked at our client, they were using a totally different set of words that our client was using in their marketing materials. So, you know, we were able to sort of take a pretty broad swath of data, say, you know, there's a gap here because you're speaking in terms that really aren't the same way that your customers are speaking, and it's not going to help you in things like search results. You need to have ownership of the terms that are popular, and even I guess a little fuzzier than that. That's actually pretty concrete. But when we looked at sort of, you know, the word clouds that would come up, and we started seeing the patterns in those things, just honing in on certain words that would keep popping up that we saw potential in, words like good, would help drive even our creative strategy as well in terms of providing insights about the things that people talked about or what they might associate with other words that were important to the industry. So I think that's an example of, again, sort of taking that philosophy, you know, using a suite of tools to sort of get to a core insight that helps drive the communication strategies that we work on with our clients. And that's how we approach it.
To me, the key piece of that is the suite of tools. If you're exclusively dating one tool or one solution here, you're going to miss out on something else. it's a space that is evolving so rapidly, and even sort of the well-known players that haven't been around for very long are companies that are constantly trying to evolve and figure out the same sort of thing we're talking about today, but trying these tool sets, understanding and really investing in them. Like Ken's talking about, like, how he lives and breathes within Omniture. I have no doubt that he's also looking at the horizon and trying to understand what's next.
Yep. One thing that might be great for all of us is, how many of you are traditional PR people? Show of hands. How many are just social people? How many do just data and measurement but aren't actively involved in the actual art of tweeting or writing press releases or doing media interviews? And how many of you actually have to do both, do your own analysis as well as the work? Okay. Let's talk a little bit about, I think, one thing we were talking about before the chat began was A/B testing of content. I think, you know, developers have done this for a long time on the front end, test different words and ads on your website, see what clicks. Marketers have done this. We were talking about the benefit of, as you're creating content, testing different types of content, different channels and avenues, where to test it, then making a decision on what's right for you and on the different channels, how to get a front page on the HuffPo versus just on the HuffPo, how to get people commenting on your Facebook posts versus just reading your Facebook posts. So maybe we could go down and start with David this time on some A/B testing, what works, what doesn't, and some interesting, maybe an example that you could share.
I'll give you not a past example, but something that we're looking at that's directly tied to the Facebook changes. And I think this is really important because I've had my head wrapped deeply into this with our teams, and I think it's along the lines of what you just talked about. So two really important changes to Facebook that will impact anyone who basically touches a Facebook initiative. I mean, there were several, but there are two that really stand out that are related to analytics and also the production of content. Obviously, real-time analytics, right, which we all know that if anyone who uses Facebook Insights, it's woefully behind. The delay in getting data has been a major issue, and so we don't know what real-time analytics will look like exactly yet, but if they are indeed real-time analytics, it's a huge change to be able to actually track progress on something potentially in real time. The second is really featured posts, which is sort of a subsection of the I'm forgetting the term that they used for the sort of suite of advertising. Anybody?
Sponsored stories?
It's not sponsored stories. They called it something else, and I'm just Reach Generator, that's what it is. Reach Generator. Okay, so Reach Generator is that describes the whole array of advertising options. However, probably the most interesting one is Featured Post, which is essentially a post that you can take and you can pay to get that put into the news feed. And we're assuming that there's going to be lots of different options around that. So think about those two tools together. And it's related to sort of A/B testing. You will likely now have the opportunity to see how a post is performing in real time, right? And then you can get some insights as to, okay, why is it performing well? Potentially, where is it performing well? And then what you can do is you can take that information and you can say, all right, now we want to make a media purchase based off of that so we can amplify that. And then you can see how it does in the news feed as well. So you're going to start to get the cycle in Facebook that basically is analytics based on what you put out there, the type of content that you put out there, how it performs in real time. And that, in theory, should also be able to give you insights into future content that you produce, because you can look at that, you can learn from it, and in theory, you should be able to replicate it over time as well. If you post an infographic or a photo on Facebook and it does really well and you're tracking it in real time and you decide to make a purchase against it and you get certain amount of results, you can benchmark that and then you can try it again.
So for us, our business is slightly different. So we really work with brands to make sure that they are engaging with the communities that are surrounding them, whether it's in a native environment or not. We make sure that they're sort of engaging at all levels and they're Gary Vee, who's one of our founders, will tell you that he doesn't want any engagement left behind for a brand. So that's where we spend our time, making sure that brands really understand how they should be engaging and what they should be engaging about. So we spend a lot of time looking at the interest graph for the community, understanding increasingly how emerging tech players that can really map that for us can change exactly the content that we're posting. So Facebook's a great example. We're also spending a lot of time looking at real time, whether it does matter, whether it doesn't, how to create a baseline. We now have 30 logos that we're working with, and we can look sort of across the sectors that we work with, whether that's CPG or entertainment, sports, and really start to map them out and understand how to test back and forth. But also just for us, it's also at that very minute level. What's the border on the picture? Where does the logo go? Branded status updates, I think, for us is something that we're seeing clients really start to spend a lot more time on. For us, the content is key. If there's not great content, it doesn't really matter. The community's not going to engage around it, and it really like does turn them off from the brand. So we're doing a lot of sort of micro-testing. Our clients are very conscious of the fact that we sort of have to stay nimble. We have someone on each account that sort of at any given moment we can walk up and ask them why something is working or why it isn't. Are they posting at a certain time of day? Has the community really latched onto something that's topical and of interest to them? And we try and stay very nimble with that. Twitter's the same. For us, it's much more of a cocktail party, I think, than Facebook. And so it's a little easier to gauge. We're starting to use a lot more tools that can kind of tell us which conversations are becoming more interesting on a moment-to-moment basis. But for us, that's a space where we can really engage back and forth and, I think, measure the effectiveness pretty rapidly, especially when you start to look at paid.
Looking at on that kind of similar till, we send out deals every day at about 5, 6 o'clock, depending on what time zone you're in. And there's an opportunity for us to sort of see what resonates across the board as it kind of moves across the country and across the world with all the other companies that we have operating under the Living Social brand. When you look at it, we've got a product called Me Plus 3. So if you buy a deal from Living Social, you get a unique URL, and you can actually tweet that out or share it via email or post it on your Facebook wall. And if you get three of your friends to buy that deal, you get it for free regardless of what the deal is. So we actually can kind of see from that what's resonating, what isn't resonating. So if there are a lot of people who are just like, wow, I just bought this deal and buy it with me, I really want it for free, or wow, this is a really cool deal, I'm thinking of buying it, or having conversations with their friends or cohorts via social, we can see what kind of deals resonate and what looks good, and that might help affect our business plans on, do we focus on certain merchants, do we focus on certain categories, how can we fine-tune it a little bit more so it resonates with our member base even more. It also helps us look at problems and issues that may be arising. If there is a merchant that just isn't providing the quality that we want to provide to our members, and if we see complaints about it, it's something that we can send to our deal quality team and our sales folks, and we can sort of figure out whether or not there was issues really with that merchant and how we can make it better. Because at the end of the day, we want the merchant to have a successful experience, we want the member to have a successful experience, and that's what helps us. So using tools like that, using tools that help us look at the volume and the quality of conversation, things like that, our social media team, which in full disclosure actually works with VaynerMedia, we're looking at ways in which we can actually take that intelligence and have that impact the deals that we offer to our members.
And for us, we don't work with anyone. All of PR, all of social is internal. We're a small but mighty team. There's four of us who do PR and a half a person who does social, and he runs all of our channels, from Google Plus to LinkedIn to Glassdoor to Twitter to the Pinterest page to you name it. So for us, we really have to focus on what we know drives, because we can't be everywhere all day. So there's certain things that we've learned over the past 12 months in this crunch to get smart, and that is when we do beautiful maps, a crime map of L.A., we feature the Stumble Upon button because people love putting that type of stuff on Stumble Upon. When we do celeb homes, we always have a Facebook integration because people love sharing it and commenting and talking about it. And then when we do just pictures of master bedrooms or amazing closets, Pinterest. People are all over it because that's what people like putting on Pinterest. So there is no one social channel. It really, again, think about what you want to get out there and what channel is right. And the only way we were able to do that was through testing, through lots of testing, moving the buttons around and seeing which ones clicked and which ones didn't. And we're constantly getting smart, constantly reevaluating. There are so many different channels that you can go down, and we know as a company we can't be everywhere. It would probably be dumb for us to be everywhere. We'd be wasting time, effort, and money. I could have a team of 12 social media people. It wouldn't pay off at the end of the day. So think about your content. Think about where your audience is at, and then be nimble and make those changes and try, test, and do more. I'm going to ask one more question, but we'd love to get questions from you guys, too. And there's a mic here in the middle, so I'm going to throw one more down the table, and then if people want to start lining up or anything that we can answer for you, we'd love to get that started next. I'd love to talk about unusual measurements. When working with clients or when setting internal metrics for your team, what are some of the things that you challenge yourself, challenge your coworkers, challenge your client, and something that maybe folks out here haven't thought about as a metric that could really push the needle. Brendan, do you want to kick this one off?
No. again, we're in a rapidly defining space. People think of us as, you know, or as our industry is just daily deals, but we're not. We've got, for us, and not to make this a pitch about Living Social, but so many different products out there that go beyond the daily deal. So for metrics and stuff like that, we're trying to find out whether or not we can actually push the needle on what's really a definable way to address the industry that we operate in. Is it local commerce? Is it social commerce? Is it all of these, you know, different things that are out there? We're looking to try and find ways to push the needle on a better definition than just daily deals, because daily deals defines discount. We're about experience and value. So, you know, is there a metrics that we can look at it? You know, I don't think we can really look at it from either traditional PR or social aspect and say, well, you know, we got five reporters today to call it social commerce or local commerce. Wow, that's a win. But it's a long-term process on this thing. And that's the type of stuff that we look to challenge ourselves. And again, vis-a-vis the competition, are we kind of innovating, and are we increasing, you know, mind share from our perspective vis-a-vis the competition? Hey, how are you? So, that's good.
So I think, sorry, one sec. So I think we're in a slightly unusual time right now. We're starting to watch the science catch up with the industry. We're starting to watch an industry really evolve really rapidly. The years at South By where we used to talk about what would happen, I think in a lot of ways now we're seeing technologies that are really interesting. And at least at Vayner, we're really excited. For us, our clients are really diverse. They each look at things that are very, very different. I think the unusual thing about this panel is in a lot of ways our clients are still measured internally, no matter what their metrics look like, around any social media program, on earned media, about the brand and what they're doing in social. And so I think in a lot of cases we're looking forward to the time where the social program can stand on its own and we really do just talk about the metrics of the program. But I think in a lot of ways these brands really have to be seen as thought leaders still. They have to talk about the programs they're running in social, and that's where sort of all of our worlds kind of collide. So it's half about doing an amazing social program, and it's half about talking about it within the industry. It has to do with talent acquisition, brand affinity, sort of industry buzz, all of those things. And I think in a lot of ways we're really starting to bring tools to our clients that they can go to their CMO or CEO and say, here's what's happening. Here's how it's impacting the bottom line. For some of our sports brands, they have really unusual metrics, whether they're player oriented, whether they have to do with sort of laddering up to the wider org, so like the NFL or MLB, and figuring out how it is that they live within that sort of wider architecture. In a lot of cases, though, we're really starting, and this is a good thing, I think, there's not that many unusual metrics that we're looking at. They really have more and more to do with business objectives, whether it's a CPG selling product. We're now closing the loop in how we can really show sort of point of sale interaction and what's that really doing for the product, like going home with the consumer.
David?
All right, I'm going to throw this random observation, not so random observation out there, and use this room as an example maybe for the ultimate unusual metric, which is psychology. If you, you know, when you look at numbers, and I'm not a super deep numbers expert, but some numbers in this room and the way that we measure things, if you look, took the number of people who were in this room at the start, right, and then you subtracted those who departed, right? You have one base of level to work with. See, there we go. Look, in real-time analytics right there. I actually should have asked her why, because that's what I'm getting at as the most unusual metric. And following that line if you actually were able to track when people were departing and correlate that with things that we were saying or who were speaking, you could potentially get some insights. Although you'd be jumping to conclusions, probably the most unusual metric is psychology, because you still don't really know why those people left. You don't know what the, you know, other factors were involved. Did it correlate with other talks that were going on at the same time? The weather, the fact that it's nice out. Jay-Z, right? Isn't Jay-Z doing something right now? Maybe they just need to go take a pee. You don't really know. So, I don't know, random. I just thought that was kind of interesting as that was happening. Some not so random things that we measure. We look at measurement in three buckets: engagement, basically all the kinds of interactions that you can measure in the social space, you know, retweets, responses, all those things. Sentiment, which is obviously not a perfect science. A lot of these tools have it built in. It gives you the idea. And then a lot of our analysts have to do a lot of manual tagging to get that right. I'm sure you guys all can relate to that. We do look at amplification a lot, because that's one of the things that we get asked for a lot, and we have to understand why things get amplified and shared. And actually, it's something that we do value in terms of being able to show some kind of progress. Not an unusual metric, but we talked about this in our conversation before we jumped on. But if I were to give it a name, it would sort of be like the marketing funnel metric. I think where there is opportunity that we're just starting to scrape the surface on between like traditional metrics and social metrics is, for example, there was a specific campaign that we did, and I think one of the most meaningful metrics that we tracked was links from social channels, a variety of social channels that actually went to a owned page. And then obviously within a site. Now, within the site, there's sort of different levels. If you think about like a marketing funnel, there are different pages on that site which sort of work you down the funnel. And I think where we can begin to sort of make sense of these worlds is tracking what's happening in the social sphere that we can measure that's linking to that, and then what's really happening, through Omniture tags or all the site metrics that we have that is tracking how people kind of work their way down the funnel. So maybe not unusual, but an opportunity to sort of, I know the previous panel was on ROI, so I think there's some ROI kind of related impact in that example.
I think engagement's so key. I think we can't stress this enough. Having 10,000 really engaged fans that are trying to interact with you as a brand versus 100,000 that really don't care and signed up when you coupon them once and like haven't seen you since. You rented those eyeballs. They're now gone. It's much better when you buy them and you're spending time with them, interacting with them. I think sentiment, especially negative sentiment, is really going to start to do interesting things. I think Facebook in particular is really going to change. We're already watching that happen. I think it's going to be harder and harder to really see organic reach within Facebook, and it's really going to become a paid game. And that's something that we're sort of readying for, and I think all brands should be readying for. For us, it's really something that the consumer especially, or whoever is on the other side of the screen from the brand, can feel if there's someone there. They know if there's tumbleweeds going across a Facebook page. They know if there's spam. If no one's interacting back with them, they're not going to spend the time, and they're certainly not going to spend the time putting sort of conversations that could happen without you listening. I think the key for us is that the conversations are happening whether you're listening to them or not. You might as well listen to them, engage back, and really take control of them, offer your point of view, and turn those customers into lifelong loyalists.
So before we go to the question, one comment is that we're talking a lot about social here, and I'm more of a traditional guy. So unusual metrics for me and how I challenge my teams and people I work with. How do you get a cover of the Huffington Post? How do you end up in the Wall Street Journal's most emailed story of the day? And to really think about what pitches and what topics will get you those cover stories. We have an economist. He writes all the time. It can be very dry. He would never end up on the front page of the Huffington Post. If he puts a different title on that very dry post, it will end up on the front page of the Huffington Post. So we're always thinking about how can we coin a term that can get trending. McMansions. We did a study on homes, 3,000 square feet or more, if people wanted them. We filtered the word McMansion everywhere, in every radio interview we did, in every TV interview, in the blog post, in the press release, in the data report we put out. 3 o'clock that afternoon, it was number 7 on Google Trends. It was trending in Twitter. Take a term and own it and try to think different when you're doing traditional and set higher goals than just 20 pieces of coverage. Set cover story goals. Set most read story goals. On Gizmodo, it will tell you how many views you have. On Business Insider, it has the chart beat. Set specific metrics for different outlets, because for us, when we're on the cover of the Huffington Post, we get 10 to 15 the amount of clicks, tweets, likes. It makes a huge difference if you're on their front page versus just their business page. So challenge your teams, challenge the people you work with to write different, think different, and get deeper in the metrics that you're setting, and you'll notice a difference. Question. Thank you for your patience.
Yeah, sure. So obviously we've talked about PR and digital. Digital is easy to measure. Kind of looking at media holistically, what about print ads? I'll give you a real-life example. Web-based company with 30,000 customers, small and medium businesses, looking at really targeting certain markets. So can we grow our business in Chicago? Does print work, right? So I'd love to hear your comments on kind of measuring print ads specifically.
Yeah, well, I can give you one that it was a radio campaign, but same type of thing, a paid media in one market. You know, we're real estate search. So at the end of the day, agents come on and buy ads to own a zip code or to feature their listings. So we didn't do a print campaign, but we did a radio campaign actually here in Austin. We saw that there was an area where there was a lot of inventory left. We weren't engaged with that many agents. So we did a specific radio campaign, 30 spots over 10 days. And then we took a group of our inside sales team where they only called Austin agents. So we were trying to connect with them, hopefully while they were riding around with clients or they heard us in their car radio. For us, that's their most engagement. Agents spend a lot of time in their car. So we looked to see if we could turn that spend of a radio ad and convert it into dollars. And at the end of the campaign, you know if you paid for the campaign for itself or not. So I don't know if you're buying an ad in a local newspaper, if you can do a direct email campaign and on the same day your ad hits and there's brand awareness and then people are going to see a higher click-through rate, a higher conversion rate. But for us, we try to do very regional. And if it doesn't pay for itself, maybe we'll try a different ad 10 days later and we'll try again. And then we'll tweak it a third time. So over the course of a month, we've done 3 different radio ads. We've done 3 different campaigns. We see what's most successful. Then we can go replicate that in another region. We don't start with national campaigns. You can't really know the value of that ad. So for us, and again, I'm a PR guy talking marketing here, so ignore me if this all sounds dumb. But I learn a lot by being internal, and I'm part of a bigger team. And for us, it was a very easy way to measure on did we recoup our costs and was it a net gain at the end of the 30 days, but also at the end of each 10-day cycle.
It also comes into, you know, where's your company or whoever you work for, where are they in the life cycle of that company. Going national actually makes a lot more sense for us on things that we do, because we're in this period of hyper acquisition of members and getting people to actually become members of our site vis-a-vis the competition. Looking at stuff in terms of print, it's very rare that we do, because again, the audiences that we're looking at traditionally, that really wouldn't necessarily resonate. And it also comes down to, what are you looking to get out of it? Is it just brand recognition? Is it customer acquisition? Is it I think the interactive part and the digital part, if you're looking to acquire people and also have the brand recognition, it's much better to go to in a digital format, be it radio programs, be it widgets on sites, any of those tools. It just makes more sense to go digital than it does print.
But in terms of so print ads, it sounds like the only way to truly measure if a brand, like that, if that's the goal, driving right brand within a market, the only way to truly tell is probably test a specific market and kind of have a control group in another market. Because if you're running print ads as Living Social nationwide, you don't know if print ads specifically did anything, right?
And is there something actionable in that ad? Is there a QR code on it which would link to something? Looking at the measurement of it, it's very tough from a national point of view, and probably also from a regional point of view, because what are the numbers that the publication's looking at? You're going to have 25,000 eyeballs on this thing. Or they're looking at circ figures, right? So there needs to be something actionable in it to see if it truly resonates. Factor in, for a course, that you're going to get only a certain percentage of response to it. So it's a tough thing to do.
I can throw out perspective. I don't know a ton about this because print isn't my area of expertise, but I know just based on the heritage of the company I work for. I mean, I work in the digital practice, but we have a heritage in public relations. The answer I'm going to give you is not specific to print ads, but it is print earned media. We do historically have done basically clippings and clip reports. You manually clip out stuff. It's kind of archaic, but the premise is, if you're working on behalf of a client, let's say it's a scenario where they're in a crisis scenario and you're working and there's a number of articles written about them and you're actually telling their side of the story. So you get a number of articles written that actually are positive, and you clip a bunch of those and you try to source those back to the media relations that the firm helped with. Let's say within 2 weeks later, after the stock has been taking a nosedive, it starts working its way up. You can kind of make a correlation. It's not an exact science, but I'm giving you a specific scenario. But that's one way that I know that traditionally has been done. Actually tracking clippings, sure, from paper. I've actually seen it done. I walked in a room one time and a bunch of people were flipping pages. It was kind of freaky.
With scissors.
It still happens, I guess.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
So this is somewhat related to the last question, but if you have a campaign going and you're getting results socially, but then there's also advertising involved, marketing, a variety of different initiatives, how do you relate that back to business objectives? I think you guys talked a little bit about designing metrics to measure against business objectives, but how do you tell if something's trending, if that's driving purchase versus the advertising that went out the exact same day versus a direct marketing piece? How are you doing that and tying it back?
This is where this panel gets a little controversial, because I think we come at this from a very different stance. For me, I feel like paid, earned, owned, and shared all have to go together. You have to measure them. The content has to be understood across all of those channels. You have to be sort of on message. We as a business sort of believe that a lot of brands use their paid channels pretty poorly to drive to social. They put a lot of money behind sending eyeballs into the social world, and then there's no experience for the user. And so even in television commercials, that applies. And so in a lot of cases, where you could measure is when they get to the social native environment and there's nothing there for them to do. To Brendan's point, there's no call to action. There's no experience for them to be had, to have had. And ultimately, there's nothing to measure. I think in a lot of ways, the traditional measures of how sort of earned media is looked at, sort of all of the reach and all of those things haven't changed. I have a PR background, and unless anything has happened in the last couple of years, I think those standard measures still apply. I think how you look at print and television and all those things. For us as a business, we fiercely are against QR codes, but I think in general, there's lots of ways to kind of tie all these things together. The key is that that the content and the measurement sort of are intertwined. If you have agencies across the board, some of our clients have 12 digital agencies. They have 35 agencies that help them within their marketing mix, making sure that as a brand you're very clearly articulating what's important to you, how it's measured, making sure they're all inputting into a central repository, and that they all are giving their own context, but context within the business objectives, I think, is how you really get back to those objectives, making sure it's clearly articulated to everyone involved.
So you saw me shaking my head a little bit. I don't disagree completely.
You can.
I do think that if you are going to spend money to drive somebody there, there better be an experience waiting for them when they get there, or you've already lost them and you wasted your money. But again, this comes down to A/B testing for us. I would not do everything at once, because then how do I know what part of that spend was successful? If I'm going to spend money, I want to test it in silos, see what is the best way to spend that money. What's my cost per user acquisition on Twitter versus Facebook versus our own content that we produce, a newsletter ad versus a homepage ad on my website? And if I can see, if I'm doing those all together, I don't know what that cost per acquisition is. I just know that I got somebody new. If I just do a homepage ad for a contest I'm running on Facebook and I put it on my homepage at Trulia.com, and I know that week I convert 3,000 people, that cost me nothing except for what I didn't sell the ad to somebody else, right? If I pay for Facebook ads the next week and I see what I drive there and I get 10,000 fans and I spent $4,000, it cost me 40 cents per fan. So for us, we don't throw money around. We have very tight budgets. So we test individual channels at different times, come up with our cost per acquisition, and then make smart decisions moving forward.
Hey, I've traditionally done traditional music PR, and the main metric, and it's kind of on the eclectic end of the long tail in terms of music, and so the main metric is, did you get me on NPR in the New York Times? And that's pretty much it, and that's, if the answer is yes, they don't want any other data. But I'm moving into another world where I've started a platform for connecting musicians and labels with journalists. It's the direct-to-press platform, and I'm curious if any of you have experience with media measurement tools that you actually linked into proprietary reporting tools or databases or anything where you've tapped into somebody's API where you can get graphs of press clippings and impact and so forth that you've integrated with your own systems.
Anyone?
I'm thinking. That sounds interesting.
That's revolution.
I might have to build that.
Well, a lot of these companies, they'll give you an API where you can plug stuff directly in, and I'm just hoping maybe someone else will know. But
we're cool. Not on the earned media side, but we do take 5 or 6 tools, splice them together, and we've created like a sort of proprietary tool internally where we can see all of them, but that's about it.
Well, come on, Kelly, now we're all on the earned media side.
That's probably true.
And we can all say we're all on the paid media side now too, because if you're talking digital, those two worlds are merging.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's very true. We're doing more and more paid.
All right, I'll keep looking. Thanks.
All right. I'll throw one. I don't know if it does what you're doing specifically, but at least for super data-rich resource, Crimson Hexagon is actually one of these platforms that I would say, I didn't mention it earlier, it's also one of the tools that we use.
Yep.
Doesn't have the prettiest UI, but pulls in huge amounts of data, and the quality is very good. Don't know if it directly addresses what you're saying, but a good data tool.
This question may be more directed to Ken and the Brendan, since you're kind of in-house running communications. My name's Brian Hoyt. I run PR for a company called Whale Shark Media here in Austin, Texas. We're an online coupon and deals marketplace. We own RetailMeNot.com here in the U.S., so if you've been seeing people handing out food truck coupons all around the city, that's us. So sorry. We are kind of trying to get our head around really this concept of ROI as a focus of measurement. And I heard you say that was another panel. But we have investors who plunked a bunch of money into us, and they want us to make sure we're not out blowing cash on earned media programs that really aren't driving results at the end of the day. And so we've really started to, and I don't know if this is much of a question or a comment, but I'd be interested to see if you're doing something similar. look at our earned media cost in terms of being a CPM in the same way that traditional advertisers do. What's my cost of reaching 1,000 people? And so when we're looking at the efficiency of a program, you know, we've become very good friends with Excel and learning how to do forecasting in terms of how we're spending money and how efficient was that spend versus the audience that we received, the creative goals that we're setting, which could be front page stories, the events that we're attending with, you know, large audiences of people, or the links or referrals that we're driving. What are you doing to kind of bring that kind of concept of ROI into your measurement as well?
I think, you know, looking at it, teamwork is a huge thing, which is a kind of really banal term, but there are so many different people in our business, and where we have to look through, like, is an email getting opened? If it's getting open, you know, what's the revenue per user? Things like that. Do the marketing channels kind of go in? You said your investors, you know, they're dumping money into you guys, and you have to make sure that you're spending wisely. There are a lot of snake oil salesmen out there, right, especially in the social space, frankly, where they can come in and they can promise a million things, and, you know, they've built a product around a cult of personality rather than actual analytics and programs. So having an understanding and an education of everybody across the board, engineers to your executives to your PR staff to your social staff, on who are the right people out there, or are you really getting value for the thing, that factors into all of that, and making sure that the money's spent really wisely. So, you know, we have teams that, you know, bridge across everything, where we have conversations once a month or whatever, you know, what programs have worked. You know, our marketing staff looks at the, you know, advertising that we've done, whether it be, you know, Pandora Radio, which was a huge advertising thing for us, all the way down to, you know, what is our social team doing to help engage our customers. So I know kind of a vague answer because we're semi-competitors.
No, we're in different space. You're a voucher company.
But voucher's not coupons. It resonates better.
There you go.
It's just a matter of making sure that everybody is educated. Because at the end of the day, you could spend a lot of money and waste a lot of money with people promising you such great rate of return on the programs that they're creating for you.
Yeah, can I just take a stab at that? I'm cautious of those approaches. I know why the requests come. You know, they want the formulas. They want to figure out how much they're making or saving, or whatever the case. I remember when there were like 50 reports on what a fan was worth, right? Like a year ago, and then all of a sudden now we get Facebook data that, you know, fans aren't visiting pages, and, you know, they're missing like 95% of stuff that comes actually, you know, that's actually generated by a brand. So that sort of debunks some of the, you know, how much a fan is worth that was done 9 months previous. A tool that we use, it doesn't get you to the point that you just asked, but I think it's a pragmatic way of at least assigning value to certain metrics, right? We call them measurement scorecards, and what we do is we try to work with the client to really understand the KPIs, the key performance indicators, from a business perspective, what those objectives are, and then we align the metrics. We kind of, you know, put them in buckets. We do it for all the sort of social metrics because that's where we start, since that's what we're getting paid to do. We try to get as much information as we can from the traditional side and also put them in similar buckets, and we work with clients to, you know, to get consensus on, are these the right KPIs? And then we produce a scorecard, which is very easy to digest. It's at least I don't think it's a direct answer, but it's a baby step.
I'd only push back on that in one regard, which is, you know, we all as communicators have to come to the table and learn to better budget for the following year. And if you can't justify the ROI as a lens on top of how much traffic you're bringing, you're not going to be able to make the argument to get an X percent increase in budget from the prior year, or to shift some of that brand money or online money, which is big bucks, into our more, what I like to say, cost-effective earned media channels.
I agree 100%. Yeah. Being an internal guy, we were talking about this. You look at how you get resources, how you get bigger budgets, how you can make more hires, and you have to justify it all. One thing I'll say to you is don't be the hero. Don't put yourself out on the line and say this is what's going to work and put all your money into it, because at the end of the day, it's better to drop programs quickly that aren't working than to spin your wheels and put more money behind something, because there's so many things to try. So if it's not working, if you find yourself spinning your wheels, if you thought you'd get a certain ROI and you're not, cut bait, get out, try something different.
Cool. Thanks.
I come from a digital agency background, and I just want to, David, maybe you might be able to kind of speak to this a little bit, since I think you just kind of covered it. As the lines and the boundaries between like paid, earned, and owned are like closing in on each other very rapidly, and you know, just the ways and the channel in which consumers consume information, and actually like showing success and kind of attributing like how individuals actually consume. Do you see, like metrics starting to become more like bucket kind of high level into like a reach, like we're driving reach across all these different platforms and where consumers are actually gathering this information, engagement, and then kind of advocacy, like into those three buckets and kind of pooling from all these different, you know, outlets and where people can consume? Or how do you efficiently track and measure across so many different platforms?
The question in there is pretty broad. I think what you're asking is how do you bucket, right? Which is kind of related to that KPI.
Really, how do you kind of attribute, you know, whether it's like your increased in earned conversation as a result when there happened to be a paid campaign and market as well? Like, how do you kind of, like, where do you draw the lines between that, because it's so heavily influenced by each other area?
And so we try to get the data from the other sources. So, for example, if we're working on an integrated campaign, right, and ultimately they're looking to measure things like visibility, impressions, advocacy. We have to get the data from the partners. You know, it could be a digital agency that's actually looking at metrics from online advertising initiatives. It could be a traditional agency that's doing television. We absolutely need to look at that data, and then we need to layer on top of the things that we're doing, because we typically do specialize in social. It's critical to map those metrics back to objectives. Like you mentioned advocacy, which is actually a key one. Advocacy would actually be that's not a metric as much as that is a KPI. If a company or organization or brand needs to define that a certain way, that advocacy is it means X, and that is an objective that we look for, and then we can go ahead and measure certain things against that. So the integration is really key. It requires getting. I mean, actually, your question is more of it's less of a sort of all these worlds merging, which they are, and more of the impact that it has on how brands need to work with multiple agencies, and then also their internal partners as well, or their internal sources as well. And right now, we're at the very beginning of it. But I know that we make attempts to try to get those other data sources and combine them with the KPIs that we look to measure.
I think Ken's really right. You have to figure out what's working for you. I think it's very cut and dry on the earned media side. Either the Wall Street Journal should be covering you or they shouldn't, and that has impact on your business. I think in social, there's a propensity to go after every single platform, and they're not of equal value to you as a brand. I think you have to understand where your consumers are. I think a lot of brands have been targeting a consumer for a long time that might not be the one that's actually buying the product or service. And really, at the end of the day, there's like so much buzz around Pinterest, and we're really excited, and we've had brands that have really seen immense success on the platform. But there are other brands within our portfolio that really have no interest or business using it. It's never going to sort of move the needle for them. I think Facebook and Twitter are the same. There's a lot of brands that really, like, you know, if the conversation's happening there, they should be there, but really, like, you know, pumping $1 million into some sort of Facebook campaign doesn't really make sense for all brands. And I think hopefully we'll get to a place where everyone's a lot more knowledgeable about that. I think in the PR space, you know, there's a lot of very savvy people over the years that have figured out how to help brands understand where they should have their messages and where it's going to resonate most.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. So we got time for one more, which is perfect because we got one more person there.
Hi there. I wanted to ask, Kelly, I work for Kraft in the UK, and I was interested in something you said earlier about helping CPGs be able to track at point of purchase the impact of some of their social activity. I was wondering if you could just expand on that a little bit, because it's obviously something that we're very interested in doing.
Mm-hmm. We're actually seeing a lot of really, really interesting emerging tech players, both in sort of coming at it from a couponing perspective, but also sort of a location-based mobile perspective. For us, one of the things we're most bullish about in our business is location-based sort of discovery, whether it's people or product, and being able to sort of track through point of sale. Now you're seeing a lot of very young companies figure out that loyalty cards in retail environments are sort of the holy grail and have had so much data over time that you can really map it. And I think more than anything, the retailers and the CPGs all need to step up, probably work together in some cases, and be a little competitive in others. And Kraft is actually doing really interesting things, I think. There's a number of other brands that are really sort of leading the way in certain regions. I think certain regions, this is also a global discussion, you're already seeing in certain regions of the world, especially Brazil and APAC, that they're far ahead of us, and it's time for some of the other territories to step forward and start to measure there.
Thank you very much.
Sure. So I wanted to thank my panelists for being here, and us bearded folk wanted to welcome Kelly to the club.
Oh, great.
And we bought her a hipster mustache to join us. So if you'd all in
Kelly.
Yes, yes, thank you.
Thank you.